And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello, welcome back to another episode.
Thank you for joining us on this beautiful day. I don't know how it is. You guys know we pre-record these. I don't know how it is then, but right now it's dark outside.
Probably gonna storm later, who knows?
Who knows? You know, the night is young.
You never know. It's New England. If you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes.
Yeah, literally. That's perfect. I'm excited today because we're going to just touch briefly on this past donation and talk about our next organization.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if you guys know, we do the swear jar, which every 10 episodes we donate to a new charity for every time we say, fuck. It's a free one for this organization we'll be doing. So as you guys know, we count it for 10 episodes. So this past organization we're donating to from episodes 51 to 60 is when we were counting this swear jar. We were doing the Beyond the Rainbow Fund, which was a cancer charity through Exeter Hospital in New Hampshire that basically gathers money for outside bills for families of those who have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
As in, life still goes on when you have cancer. Bills still need to be paid, mortgages, people have to go to work, or, you know, all this stuff. Right now, we don't have the total for you. Next episode, we will talk about it.
Yep.
And I think, just to prepare you guys, I will probably get emotional. Because as most of you know, if you're a loyal listener, we started the Swear Jar Fund for my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
She used to listen to the podcast, and she loved it, but she didn't like that I said fuck so much. So, we started the Swear Jar Fund. We decided to make it a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, my grandmother passed away at the beginning of June. So, we've still been continuing on. And it felt like this charity that we just did was appropriate because she went through Exeter Hospital for some of her treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it fit. It made sense.
For sure. A very nice dedication.
Yeah. And, you know, we have a lot of people who've reached out and said they want to donate and a lot of great stuff. So, I appreciate it. Grammy appreciates it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather appreciates it. I recently taught him what a podcast was and what that swear jar entailed. Regardless, we're pretty excited today to talk about our next organization.
It's a good one, for sure. It's one that kind of encompasses a huge issue in true crime and in the country, honestly.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really good one. A lot of our cases, especially our case profiles, relate directly to this.
Absolutely.
So I think it'll be a good one to give back.
Absolutely. Honestly, we were kind of just searching for other organizations to donate to, and this one kind of fell on my lap, and we were like, this is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So this next round of donations, the 10 episodes from episode 61, starting right now,
mm-hmm.
I think I already gave two, which is a problem, and that goes until episode 70,
mm-hmm.
holy shit, is going to be donating to the organization Stop Handgun Violence. This organization is out of Beverly, Mass, and like I said, it just fell in our laps,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't even have to look into it, and I was like, that's what we're doing, because it's such a good charity. Gun violence is so prevalent in America,
mm-hmm.
in New England, in the Pacific Northwest, in the South, in everywhere. And it's one of the things that I've always been really into in terms of, like, interested in and
mm-hmm.
kind of understanding why is school shootings. It happens so frequently, and it's like, literally, why?
Right. Shootings anywhere. I mean, you go on the news, it's like, oh, this parade was shot up. The movie theater was shot up. A grocery store. A
temple.
Concert. Anywhere you go that has more than a handful of people,
mm-hmm.
it's like you need to watch your back and be aware of your surroundings that you could get shot.
Yeah. Yep.
100%. I think everyone in this country collectively is so traumatized from gun violence. I mean, you don't even have to have been a survivor of an incident to know of an incident, to know someone personally that has been affected by gun violence. It's crazy.
It's nuts.
You could be in the safest neighborhood ever and you still can't get rid of it.
Right. Exactly. And this website, you know, it's stophandgunviolence.org. Now, they have some amazing statistics just on their front page alone. Most notably, this blows my mind. As of the time of this recording, 365,703 Americans have been killed by guns since the massacre at Sandy Hook. That happened in December of 2012. Shit. It's been almost 10 years, and almost 500,000 people have died because of gun violence. You know, you guys know we're passionate about things. This was one that just does not make sense to me.
Right.
There's also some other amazing statistics, like Massachusetts manufactured AR-15 military assault weapons that are prohibited in the Commonwealth, aka like Massachusetts, were used in the Parkland, Florida shooting,
mm-hmm.
the Aurora, Colorado shooting, which was also in 2012, the Las Vegas Country Music Festival shooting, and the San Bernardino, California shooting. And those all together have over just about 100 people dead.
Wow.
And well over 500 people injured from those alone. And those are guns that are manufactured, like AR-15 rifles in Massachusetts, and they're banned. They're banned now because of that. You don't need an AR-15. You don't.
No, that's the thing. And, you know, the whole argument, oh, well, what if people have to go hunting for their food? You're not taking an AR-15 into the woods and blowing up a deer.
You're taking it to your school where they serve you lunch at the cafeteria.
Right.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yep.
This one also kind of tugs at your heartstrings. 1 out of 10 gun deaths are age 19 and younger.
Wow.
And this kind of goes into our case profiles because a lot right. of the cases we cover are teenagers.
Right. Even accidental gun deaths, like you'll hear a lot about kids being brought into the emergency room because they got into the safe that wasn't locked properly and they're just playing around with the gun and it was loaded and they thought the safety was off, but they thought the safety was on, but it was off. And,
yeah.
you know, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's nuts. It's truly nuts. And, you know, it's just this organization is so amazing
mm-hmm.
that they're trying so hard. I love that they're based in Massachusetts.
Perfect.
I wanted to do an organization that was local, and mm-hmm. this is perfect. And it also, I mean, it's so relevant. I went to a comedy show at Fenway Park last week at the time of this recording, and it was packed. It was crazy. And we had to lock our phones up.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us little bags because it was a comedy show. They don't like to do that. And it was Bill Burr, who's a pretty big comedian. And it was great. That was all fun. But before it even started, I was sitting there and I noticed that there was a guy like on the roof, like the roofiest roof that they had. And it was getting kind of dark and it freaked me out because I thought, holy shit, is that a gunman?
Right. He's in perfect view. He is the perfect opportunity.
Absolutely. It took me a second, but I realized it was like a security guard or a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
But then it took me a second to realize that he's looking for that.
Right.
He had binoculars and he was looking at the best vantage point to see into the stadium to see if there was danger. Like, that shouldn't be a thing. We're at a ballpark.
Right.
Seeing a comedian. Ha ha, funny. It's insanity. And I was genuinely terrified for a minute because I was like, oh my God. Oh no, it's just a police officer. Oh my God, he's looking for that.
Right.
What if he got a tip?
100%.
What if he's there for a reason? It's sad that we have to have protective measures like that prophylactically before anything's even happened
mm-hmm.
because it's happened so much.
Right.
This is one of the hills I'll die on.
Mm-hmm.
You do not need an AR-15. If you live in the woods, if you live on a farm and it's just your house, 1,700 acres of land around you, and a bear breeding ground, I get it. Fine. But you take that gun and leave it on your 1,700 acres in your tiny little safe locked away so your cousin's visiting with their newborn and their toddler who crawls and gets into everything doesn't
mm-hmm.
get into the fucking safety cabinet. I mean,
right.
like, it's ridiculous. Kids shouldn't have access to guns. People with mental health problems that are either self-inflicting
mm-hmm.
problems or otherwise, you know, homicidal ideation, should not have access to guns.
100%.
I would not trust, like, hardly anyone with a gun. Wouldn't trust myself with a gun.
No, and there's another statistic where, you know, people like to say, oh, if you're a woman living alone, you should get a handgun. Just like a cute little pink handgun that's easy to hold and no recoil and you can put it under your bed. The presence of a gun in the home, whether or not you own it, completely increases the risk of gun violence.
100%.
Whether it's a domestic issue, whether it's you are living alone and you have the gun for safety, the amount of cases where women have been shot with their own gun that they have purchased to protect themselves are insane.
It's ridiculous and it's unfair and...
No. And then you could take some random person off the street and they can walk into a Walmart and they can buy... They can have a field day. They can buy the whole rack if they want. And you go into their house and there's like walls decorated with guns and piles of ammunition. I'm like, what are you doing?
I once got with a guy from Tinder who... sorry, mom and dad. He had... His wall, so he was like, he was in the Coast Guard or something, and he had on his bedroom walls mounted like a whole bunch of like muskets and swords and like rifles, because that was his like thing. Yeah, I didn't see him after that or even talk to him after that. Why is that necessary?
Why are you so adamant about having a hobby that stems from violence?
I mean,
take up knitting. Go to a poetry club. Like,
poetry slam, right? That's violent, kind of.
Like, why? It doesn't sit right with me.
Mm-hmm. It's scary.
Being so obsessed with guns, like that I see as a red flag, because you're so obsessed and you're so defensive over something that causes so much violence.
Yeah.
If you want to have a gun, you know, New Hampshire has stand your ground laws, open carry, all this other shit. You could go in downtown Portsmouth and someone could have their gun like strapped to their back walking down the street.
And that makes me so nervous.
I don't feel safer when a gun is present. I feel more scared for my life.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in schools. Like, why are this whole campaign like, we should arm teachers?
No,
like,
we shouldn't.
What? I'm sorry, but thinking back, I don't need my English teacher trying to handle an AR-15 as a, we could do a whole podcast on this, but you know,
I think we're pretty similar in saying that we have a few topics that we will die on that hill.
Yeah.
Abortion is one of them. Get an abortion all you want, love you forever, or don't. I don't care. It's your body. And gun violence, forget
for
it.
Sure.
It makes me so nervous. Mental health background checks are so important. I have had depression and anxiety and suicidal ideation since I was 12 years old. I turn 24 next month.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would not want me to have a gun, if whether it was for protection or not.
I would
want them to refuse that sale, because one really bad day or a few weeks of just building up could be detrimental. It's just a fact. And I think of all those babies at Sandy Hook. The 20 kindergartners and first graders who were shot and killed with a gun that this person, yes, he legally obtained it, but he was very, very mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
He should not have been allowed to have that gun. He killed his own mother, and then he killed 20 children and 6 adults in the school. Why is that even a sentence? Why is that even something I can repeat and just a little bit change the details?
100%.
And go over and over again in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why can I do that? So anyway, that's why I think that we should really donate to this cause. It's a great cause.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. And we're sticking to it. I'm pretty excited. They deserve it.
It'll be a good one for sure.
Absolutely. Speaking of donating money.
I always love doing this.
You guys donate to us.
So, obviously, we pre-record, so we're a little behind on our Buy Us a Coffees. We're going to do our little shout-outs. Some shout-outs are in order.
Yes.
Sarah bought us both a coffee.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah. Molly bought me a coffee for my birthday.
So nice.
That was so sweet.
I love that.
That was, like, one of the first things. Like, I woke up, and I'm checking my phone, and I went to check our email, and I was like, Oh my god, look at that. So nice. Cute. Yeah. Molly, thank you. That was very nice of you.
Awesome.
And also Nick got us each a coffee, which was very sweet.
Thanks, Nick. So sweet.
Yeah.
We love you guys.
Thank you guys so much.
Oh, it's awesome. It's nice to know we have people in our corner.
Mm-hmm.
So we appreciate that. Today our case is based out of Maine,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot of questions.
For sure.
A lot of confusion and a lot of just misunderstanding of, like, why this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about a teenager who was killed, so it's hard and it's terrible, and it never gets easier talking about these things. Something about it being a kid is the worst.
It's awful.
She didn't get to grow up, and that's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope you guys stick around, take a listen. It's definitely important to know because it is unsolved, and we will have information at the end for you to contact if you know anything.
Yes.
And without further ado, today we will be covering
the murder of Teresa Duran.
Okay, in typical True Crime New England fashion, let's start with our sources, and in typical True Crime New England fashion, Katie, what do you got for me?
In atypical True Crime New England fashion, I do not have Wikipedia.
Me neither.
Damn. It's always a sad day.
It is a sad day.
I do have the Press Herald, B98.5 FM. It's a radio kind of show out of Maine.
Okay.
Law.justia.com. We've used them before. It's kind of like court transcripts almost.
I love it.
Really, really informative.
Yeah.
I use WGME.com as well as Web Sleuths.
Nice. I use WGME.com. I used Google News Archive Search for the Lewiston Journal. I also used Law Justia, which again, love, and Portland Press Herald.
Cool.
Great. Good talk. Let us tell you about Teresa. This cute, her school picture. She kind of reminds me of old pictures of my mom.
Aww.
Just the same haircut and the, yeah.
Sweetie pie.
She was such a cutie. Teresa May Duran was born on October 21st, 1969 in Westbrook, Maine. Where we're sitting right now, Katie, we're about like 0.2 miles from Westbrook.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, like I live right on the line. I mean, no, I don't. So Teresa, she was so smart. She was a smarty pants. She was known to be smart, and she was also pretty popular with her friends. She had a lot of friends, very well known in her little community. At the time of this incident, Teresa was preparing to be a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm.
She had just finished eighth grade. A baby. A literal baby.
Yeah.
She was so excited because she was so smart and she liked school and she also was pretty active. So she played soccer and softball and she also loved to roller skate and swim and she was just like an athletic little chick. She was really like doing it. And what totally touches my heart is that she was a wicked animal lover.
Mm-hmm.
She loved her cat. She loved animals in general, and she had dreams of becoming a veterinary assistant.
Oh.
That was her dream, and I think that's such a beautiful dream to have.
That's so cute.
I know. It's my dream, honestly. So good. I love that. So I read that, and I felt it in my heart, because it's a 14-year-old girl.
I also saw that she still had her stuffed animal collection.
Yeah. She's a child.
Mm-hmm.
And this horrible, horrible thing happened, you know? It's awful.
The weekend of Friday, July 27th, 1984, and Saturday, July 28th, Teresa told her parents that she was going to spend the weekend at a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to come home that Sunday, the 29th. Everything's great. You know, when Teresa says she'll be home, she comes home.
She's very reliable.
Perfect. Yes, she's a great kid. I will say that her parents did add in a later interview that Teresa told them she was going to a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
they had a sneaking suspicion she was going to spend the weekend with a boy she had been seeing.
Okay.
So mom kind of had a gut feeling, you know, my daughter's telling me one thing. She is going to be in high school. She's 14. She's a teenager. She has been kind of seeing this guy.
Yeah.
She's telling me one thing. My gut is telling me another thing. But Teresa stuck to her story. She's like, no, I'm going to a girlfriend's house. I'll see you guys on Sunday, the 29th.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, I mean, as long as you come home when you say you'll be home like you always do.
Right. Be safe.
We'll be fine.
Yeah.
Right. She didn't come home.
No. And immediately her parents, Irene and Don Sr., they were horrified.
Mm-hmm.
The gut feeling that Irene had started to become more than just a feeling. More like a realization. Mm-hmm. And she was terrified. Her father was terrified. Teresa was reliable. This never happened. And then it kind of became like, was she with this boy?
Mm-hmm.
Did she really go where she said she was going to go? Why isn't she coming home? Did something happen Friday night?
Right.
How long has she been missing, kind of deal? So, like you said, Katie, they kind of thought, she with a boy? And the only reason they thought that, besides being, you know, a teenage girl, is because she had been seeing someone, mm-hmm. like you said, and they had met him.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, their first impressions were not great. They weren't a huge fan of this guy for a few reasons, and I can't say I blame them so much. He kind of sounded like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And listen, been there, done that, but yeah. She's 14.
Right.
And that's so young to be in a relationship where you're abused or not happy or just, it's so easy to become blind
mm-hmm.
in that situation because you're 14. I love him. Right? I mean, come on.
Oh my God.
It's scary.
Yeah.
So Irene and Don, they, at this point, they lived in Gorham, Maine, which is also next to Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking everywhere for her. They said, okay, what are her local haunts? Where does she go? Who are her friends? Blah, blah, blah. And they went everywhere and they could not find her.
No. And that's saying a lot because it's not like her parents are just going around searching blindly. Don had grown up in the area mm-hmm. and the family had been in the area together for over a decade. They knew it well.
Yeah.
It's not a huge area.
It's not.
You know, there's not a whole lot of territory to cover.
It's not, no.
And if you've been there for over a decade and Don grew up there,
right.
I mean, it's pretty safe to say they know what they're doing and they know where yeah. they should be looking.
I went to college in Gorham. I lived in the dorms on the USM campus. And of course, it was cut short because of COVID. But mm-hmm. the 3.5 years I lived there, I could tell you a lot about Gorham. It's just a normal small town.
Mm-hmm.
So if you grew up there, 100% could see how you'd know every corner.
Right.
You'd know everywhere to check. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
They asked all of her friends. They called the police. They looked everywhere. And they couldn't find her. The only thing that kind of tipped them off was Irene and Don went to that boy.
Yep.
That Teresa had been seeing. They said, well, let's ask him, you know? Let's see if he knows anything, if she went to his house.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to him, and the gut feeling Irene had just got worse and worse when they were talking.
I'm sure she wanted to strangle him.
Ugh, I know I would.
Teresa was supposed to come home Sunday, July 29th.
Right.
She didn't. Mom reports her missing Monday, July 30th.
Right.
The same day she's reported missing, her mom is like, okay, we gotta ask around here. I bet you she was with this boy. Let's go talk to him.
Right.
So the same day Teresa's reported missing, her mom, Irene, goes to this boy. His name is Scott Doucette. She asks him point blank, have you seen Teresa this weekend? He's like, no. You know how people sometimes when they're lying, they won't look at you and they're kind of just like looking at their feet and yep. fidgeting. And
yeah.
It's like, you're not being slick. You're not fooling anybody. This mom is onto your ass and she knows something's going on. You cannot fool her.
No, no, no.
Yeah. So he's like, no, but Teresa's mom is like, no, he's lying.
Right.
He's fully lying. I have a gut feeling. I feel like she was here. I feel like you guys spent it together, but he's telling me no.
Yeah.
And she already didn't like him because Teresa had told her that at least on one occasion that we know of, Scott hit her.
Yeah. And these are 14-year-olds.
Right.
Yeah. That's toddler shit.
You don't hit people. Like, I'm not... Ugh. And so it didn't really help matters that when Teresa brought Scott over to meet her parents, they're like, yeah, you know, we're not really liking him. We don't really get a good vibe from him. She kind of shut down and stopped talking to them about him completely.
Yeah.
And this really wasn't like her at all.
No.
She was one of those kids that would come home and actually tell you about your school day.
Right.
Like, actually tell you what's going on in her life and, oh, yeah, this person at lunch and playing sports. And, like, when you come home and your kids are like, oh, it was fine. Today was good.
Yeah.
I'm going to my room. Like, Teresa would sit down and talk to her parents. And so when she shut down and just giving them yes, no, short answers when they're asking, they're like, oh, okay, she's hiding stuff from us.
Yeah. And there's this great quote that Irene said that she'd listen to others' problems, but she wouldn't tell us hers.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel that. I totally get that. I'm guilty of that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just that kind of person, exactly like you said. She sat down, she listened, and she talked, but if it came to a subject that was rocky,
mm-hmm.
she didn't say anything. She'd skirt around it. So, clearly this boyfriend wasn't the best influence, wasn't the best for her, did not leave a good impression on her parents, and
mm-hmm.
now he was lying after Teresa went missing. What the fuck?
Right.
What I like about Irene is that she straight up asked Scott if he was lying.
Yeah, she was not bullshitting.
No bullshit from her. She said, literally, are you lying to me right now? And he was like, no. No, Drew. And he probably walked off and sprayed his room with Axe. I don't know if that existed in the 80s, but if it did, he would use it.
Slammed his door.
Yep.
Oh my god, Mom! Leave me alone!
I'll do my homework later. Like, 100%.
I fucking can't.
So, unfortunately, about 35 days after she left her house, a gruesome and heartbreaking discovery was made when a young couple who was walking with their dog came across a decomposing body in the woods off of Plummer Road in Gorham on September 2nd of 1984. Unfortunately, it was the body of Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
And from what they could tell, she obviously had been decomposing. It was the summertime. But from what they could tell, she had been shot 3 times, at least. Which, of course, kind of ties into our whole handgun violence argument.
Correct.
Could this have been avoided? Yes. Should it have been avoided? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She's 14. You know?
Right. You're not defending yourself from a 14-year-old girl. Sorry.
And what was heartbreaking, too, is that the officer who was in charge, his name was Jody Thomas, he came to the Duran household and
mm-hmm.
he said, we found a body. We don't know if it's Teresa's yet. Are there any identifying markers on Teresa? And Irene was like, yes, yes. She has a birthmark on her right foot. And unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
so did the body. So it was that of Teresa's. And naturally, Irene, Don Sr., the whole community is devastated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a teenage girl. Shot to death and left to die in the woods.
Awful.
Just terrible.
Teresa was found wearing dungarees and a dungaree jacket, which is so, like, teenage girl in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Not a ton of information was released about her body,
mm-hmm.
Like, how it was found specifically. We don't know a lot about any kind of a murder weapon. We know that she was shot. We don't know, like, the caliber of the gun or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure police have that information, but it hasn't been released to the public.
Right.
A lot of times it's a privacy matter where the parents are saying, you know, this is really horrific sensitive information. We don't really need the whole world knowing our daughter was found in a certain way,
right.
or, you know, we don't, and sometimes police genuinely don't know certain things.
Right.
Like, they might not have been able to tell the specific kind of gun it was based on decomposition and all this other stuff. You know, it's really unfortunate, and it having occurred in the 80s probably doesn't help with, you know, DNA and crime scene stuff, yeah. and it, yeah, it just sucks.
It's so easy for a crime scene back then to be covered in other things.
Yep.
Spit on, cigarette butts, tobacco, mm-hmm. you know, like a whole bunch of anything. And it's been 35 days.
Right.
So many things could have happened around that area.
Mm-hmm.
Animals, rain, snow, well, not snow, but, well, it is New England, you never know. but so many things.
Right.
And so they find her body and they just can't, so little is known.
Yeah.
Irene talks about how the most popular theory for Teresa's disappearance was that she was a runaway. And
wow.
Yeah. And despite this thinking, the family still was shocked that she was found, and she was shot to death, and she was in the woods in the same town she lived in,
mm-hmm.
and everyone thought she was a runaway.
Mm-hmm.
And even so, she's 14. She's not going to have the means to go anywhere. Look for this child. That's me to the police department, not to Irene. Right?
Right. For sure.
It's just like,
right.
Why would this happen to such an innocent little girl? And even if she wasn't innocent, she mm-hmm. didn't deserve that. Nobody deserves that. She had dreams. She had hobbies. She had family and friends that loved her.
Mm-hmm.
To shoot her and leave her body to decompose, heartless.
It's insane. So, one of the first suspects, you know, there's a saying in true crime, oh, it's always the boyfriend, it's always the husband. Naturally, all eyes go toward Scott, our boy.
Our boy, Liar McLiarton, hits girls at 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, really great guy so far. Really awesome. They're thinking it's him. You know, gears are turning, nothing's really coming out of it. Days go by, turn into weeks, months. Just shy of 2 years after Teresa's body is found, on July 24th, 1986, two juveniles who were 15 and 16 at the time Teresa's body was found, Scott Doucette and his bestie boyfriend, Mark Parker, respectively, were arrested for Teresa's murder.
Yes. And this was a huge, like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Where did that come from? And these were, I mean, they were still young themselves.
Right.
So it was like, whoa, two juveniles killed this other juvenile?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And luckily, and I think this is great, they were ultimately decided to be tried as adults. Which,
yeah.
Absolutely, they should have been. So good on that court system. So a lot happened within the investigation. You know, not a lot of information is available, but we know that there's a lot that happened. Essentially, you know, they were going to be tried as adults and they were going to have trials, and the juries essentially came back with a guilty verdict of murder.
Mm-hmm.
What it sounds like is it never made it to the sentencing phase for either of them, because a lot of shit went down. Backs turning on each other,
mm-hmm.
stabbing in the back. Oh, it was...
Lying under oath.
Ooh, there was a lot of perjury.
Yes.
A lot of that. Like... teenagers.
Right.
I almost wonder if they didn't understand, but then I think, well, they killed someone, so they understood enough.
Right.
So, Mark Parker's trial, there was a key witness in this trial. His name was Lewis Chipper Chase. He went by Chipper. At the time of this trial, he was 22. So 2 years before he was 20, why are you hanging out with the 15, 16-year-olds, bud.
100%.
Weirdo. So, at the time of his testimony, Chipper was serving a 9-year sentence in the Maine State Prison for firearm theft, as well as aggravated assault.
Oh.
So, he is cool. Chipper claimed that at the time of the murder, he was in contact with both Scott and Mark, and they had told him a story that involved Doucette expressing the desire to kill Teresa, and then together, the boys came back later to talk to Chipper and said that they had shot her to death. Chipper says that the story they told him involved them saying, quote, they had taken her off in the woods and killed her, end quote. The only problem about Chipper was that while he was on the stand, the defense attorney kind of came forward and it was, you know, cross-examining him, and he said, you know, he brought up his criminal history and he brought up the fact that Chipper had previously talked to police officers, had never mentioned the story, it had been 2+ years. The thing is, Chipper was like, oh, well, I just couldn't take it anymore, which is, sure, happens, but it just didn't seem likely because he had kept it in for so long and had talked to the police so many times.
Right.
It almost seemed like maybe he was trying to get a lighter sentence for himself. And then it was brought up that Chipper was a frequent liar.
Oh.
Yeah, to the police specifically. And that he did have a history of perjury, lying under oath. So that's good. He also, you know, he, of course, now he's like, well, I'm telling you about her now, so clearly I don't have a reason to hide it. And, I mean, yeah, I guess.
I can't.
In the end, Parker did get convicted of murder. However, it didn't end with him in jail.
No.
No.
On November 11th, 1986, while hanging out, waiting for shit to happen, at the Cumberland County Jail, Mark Parker shared some gossip with a group of people. In this group was a state police officer, an assistant attorney general, and Mark's very own attorney. Mm. Mark fills them in on a little piece of information.
Yeah.
A little some hot goss. He told this group that Scott admitted to him, point blank, looked him dead in the eye, that he murdered Teresa Duran. Scott, all by himself. All him.
And they were like, whoa, really?
Yeah, that's some new, that's a new fun little tidbit.
Don't just say that, man.
Mark's attorney was like, cha-ching!
Yeah, yeah, right. The only problem was he wasn't under oath when he made that statement.
Indeed.
So they were like, well, you know what? Let's give him a polygraph test. And so they did. And he said it again. And he passed. He's telling the truth. But he wasn't under oath again. So it was like, okay. Regardless, it worked out in his favor. He was acquitted.
In
1987. And he was set free like a little dove.
So after he was set free, flying away, he changed his story 2 separate times. And now the changes are both under oath.
Right.
Because they're like, okay, you didn't do it. Your bestie boy Scott did. Scott, let's figure this out. We're going to go to trial. Let's figure this out. Mark, let's get him on the stand.
Yeah.
Swears in, you know, hand on the Bible. I solemnly swear. Okay, perfect. Wow, that's crazy because the story you're telling us now is different from the one you told us. Getting the polygraph is different from the one you told us from the last trial. And wow.
Wow. Wow.
What's going on, Mark?
This idiot. This idiot. I can't.
At Scott's bail hearing on May 29th, 1987, and at a suppression hearing in Scott's case on August 14th, 1987, Mark testified that he had been lying when he made the statement saying that Scott confessed to him. He then addressed everyone in the room, both times, and he said Scott had never admitted to killing Teresa Duran. What a great friend.
Such a good friend. Using him to get out of prison, a scapegoat, and then immediately getting out of prison saying, trust me, bro, trust me. And then immediately turning around and being like, JK, y'all. See ya. Double Jeopardy. Can't try me again. Right?
Yep.
That's how it works. And then that ended up working out in Scott Doucette's favor. He had never ended up being sentenced because there wasn't enough evidence to really bring him to light as being the murderer. There just wasn't enough evidence.
Right.
But now, we're sitting here in 2022, and it's been 38 years,
mm-hmm.
and technically speaking, her murder has still not been solved.
Right.
Do we think maybe it was these two boys? I think probably. They got off, though.
Right.
As teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So, to this day, Teresa's case is open and unsolved.
Irene Duran, Teresa's mom. I'm not sure if she's still alive. If she is still alive, she would be 87 years old. She said in an interview that it would be a relief to know the identity of who killed her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She stated, "My husband died not knowing who did it. He passed away from cancer in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone with any information about the murder of Teresa Duran is asked to please contact the Maine State Police Major Crimes Unit. Their phone number is 207-624-7076.
Perfect. Thank you. That's so sad. This mm-hmm. poor girl. This poor fucking girl. Her family, her dad dying before he knew.
I know.
That part hurts me. That hurts.
How awful.
You can only hope that they're together again,
mm-hmm.
right? If you believe in that, it's a beautiful thought to have, mm-hmm. you know? It's just tragic. This poor girl, she deserves justice. They all do, but man, 14.
It's so rough when it's a kid like that.
Senseless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, if you wanted to tell us what you think, do you think Scott and Mark did it? What do you think about Chipper, this Chipper character?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's interesting, too.
For sure.
You can reach out to us on our Instagram and Twitter, which is truecrimeny.
All lowercase.
Or you can shoot us an email at truecrimeny@gmail.com.
You could also head over to our website, truecrimeny.com. We have a handy-dandy submission tool. You could send us your thoughts on this case, other cases we've covered, cases you'd like for us to cover in the future, based in New England, please.
Please.
Questions, comments, concerns, feedback, or just say hey.
Hey.
If you want to be anonymous, you can totally do so. If you want to leave your name, you can totally do so. If you suggest a case to us, we'll give you a shout out.
Yeah. Just make sure that if you don't want to be named, ask to remain anonymous.
Yep.
But we will give you a shout out if we cover that case.
For sure. And if you want to go a step further and make our whole day, you could go to Spotify, if that is where you so choose to listen, and give us a star rating. Or if you're more of an Apple Podcast type person.
Like me.
Yes, I'm Team Spotify, your team Apple Podcast. So if you're like Liz with the team Apple Podcasts, you could go over there and give us a star rating and or a written review.
We would appreciate either one or none. Just thanks for listening.
Absolutely.
So with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye. Goodbye.